What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the Feminist Bar Podcast. The Feminist Bar Podcast. Okay. Hi, everybody. How's it going? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tina Tsuemaka. And welcome to the very first episode of the 80,000 Too Many Project. So I just want to introduce this project to you before we get into this episode, as I will be doing throughout this entire series. The 80,000 Too Many is an abortion storytelling project that is going to be demystifying and destigmatizing abortion in Zimbabwe, with the broader strength of lobbying and resource mobilization, and just facilitating creative collaboration around safe abortion. This episode in this particular podcast series is currently being funded by the Urgent Action Fund and by Black Feminist Fund. So shout out to our donors for seeing our vision as a young feminist organization. We care about you a lot and we value you deeply. And to start off this series, we are going to be talking about the law and abortion in Zimbabwe, just because this is where everything begins, right? It essentially regulates everything. And we have a feminist legal professional here with us today, and I'm going to let her introduce herself and then we will like get right into the episode. Hi, Rotendo. Do you want to go ahead and say hi to the people? You want to tell them who you are, what you do, what you care about, etc.?
All right. Hi, Tenatswe. Thank you for having me on your podcast. My name is Rotendo Charmaine Magadze. I'm a young female human rights activist, a feminist, very much so. Women's rights activist, as well as a gender and legal analyst. So what I like, I love women. So anything to do with women would actually wake me up or even be in my dreams at any given point. But other than that, I just love being in spaces such as these because they give me a reflection of where to be and where to go, especially when you you say out something, it gives you clarity on what and when to do something.
Yay, that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for your introduction and thank you for your time. Thank you for being here, for imparting the knowledge onto everyone that's listening. So wherever you're listening from, even if you're not from Zimbabwe, this is probably relevant because legal frameworks in Africa around safe abortion are more or less the same, and they have been criminalized and restricted for similar reasons. So honestly, whatever recommendations or whatever perspectives that we can get from, you know, legal professionals around strategic litigation will probably be relevant in any and every country. So the first thing that we want to talk about is the history of abortion laws in Zimbabwe. So this is going to be one of those episodes where I'm just listening. I'm just going to be listening.
I have a feeling it's not going to be true.
So, Regina, do you want to just, maybe you can just summarize for us the history of abortion laws, what the current legal frameworks that regulate abortion in Zimbabwe are and how they came to be?
All right. So in Zimbabwe, the issue of abortion is not a conversation that has begun in the, 20th century, so to speak. Prior to us getting to a point of making or having these conversations freely on these social media platforms and so forth, the struggle actually began in around the 1970s when we were still Rhodesia, so to speak. And this was in connection with a case that happened. If I would refer to the case, it's called Rex versus Bourne, in case someone wants to go and Google it. Then we had a white bench, and on this bench, it was ruled out that abortion, there was an offense that had been committed against a woman. And then it was ruled out that abortion could be legally performed to save a mother's life. And there were other underlying arguments within the case of looking at the health of the mother, whether it's important to save life or the life of an unborn child over the life of someone who's already there, especially with the different nuances of and uncertainties of not knowing whether that child can be carried to full term and so forth. So it was decided then, and then it was the abortion center was in Bulawayo, and it could only be done by gynecologists at the Bulawayo Central Hospital. Then after that, we noted that within the history and advent of just trying to get to have a clear slate on what is allowed and when can a woman actually do that. It makes me cringe to say what is allowed, because it feels like someone else is dictating on what a woman can do with her body. But then again, there was a woman liberation movement that then came around around 1976 thereabout, where they were actually, you know, approaching the commission to say we need a proper termination of pregnancy act that would actually as well give clear guidelines as to what needs to be done. So between around 1970 and 1976, the conversation was ongoing with all of these cases coming up and people. So the commission ended up giving recommendations, and they loosened the prohibition of noting that a woman could not abort, where they highlighted that a woman could actually terminate a pregnancy if that pregnancy constituted a danger to her mental health, or cause serious physical health issues to herself, or if the child was going to be born and scientifically they would suffer physical defects, then they called them mental and physical defects. Even the language was still a bit archaic, and then where the mother is an imbecile or an idiot. So there, after the other women's group, National Organization for Women, and other groups just continued to make conversations, noting that they needed laws that would actually regulate this and also give the freedom to women. Also noting, you know, the unrecorded and unreported surveys of women that were doing, going on to have these abortions without any help of a medical practitioner. So there about from 1976, there was a proposal for a termination of pregnancy act, which then came into effect in 1978. And it was just giving the circumstances in which one can abort, which is one, if the child, the unborn child, which is a fetus, poses a threat to the health of the mother, or if there are going to be any health or physical defects on the child, so much so that even if they are born, they cannot live a normal life, or in the case of rape or incest. So those were the terms. So right after independence, we just rode on with that law, and up to date, apparently this is the law that we're still using, and it's very sad because we're in the 21st century and we are still using these archaic laws. There have been a lot of conversations on trying to, you know, be more flexible or to give amendments to the law and things like that, but now we have seen that the movement is moving towards just making it legal, as are in other countries, neighboring countries, South Africa, so to speak. So we have the finance, the then Minister of Finance, Tendai Biti, also putting in contributions, women's group, different civic society organizations, now just pushing around conversations of having abortion legal, or rather the term that is used legally is termination of pregnancy. So that's the history that we have on termination of pregnancy as of date.
Thank you. That was so informative. That was so informative and reinforcing what I was saying about this episode probably being relevant to all people in Africa, because if as long as you were a colony of Britain, chances are around 1907, termination of pregnancy legislation also changed. So currently, I know that there is a criminal sanction for performing or having an abortion outside of these parameters set by the termination of pregnancy. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that is usually prosecuted and what the criminal sanction for that is?
All right. So termination of pregnancy in Zimbabwe by reason of us having this act, having to specify the conditions in which it is legal, it then becomes automatically illegal for any woman or girl to terminate a pregnancy without an order of the court. So the nuances are that under the circumstances that I have expressed, if someone is raped, if someone they have committed incest, which is a crime in Zimbabwe, having a relationship with someone within a close proximity of a relation, or if someone has some health issues and things like that, only under those circumstances can termination of pregnancy be done. Maybe I can start by explaining termination of pregnancy based off of the health issue without looking at when a sexual offense has been done towards one person. So on the health aspect, termination, where we say the child, someone carrying a child can actually be a risk to their life, or maybe if someone is mentally handicapped or things like that. It necessarily doesn't require the court, or if the fetus and its growth, there are physical and other, disabilities that could potentially risk them not living a normal life after being born. In that case, a doctor, two doctors, give recommendation, and they, if their recommendation is the same, that termination needs to be done. There is no need for anyone to make an application to the court because it's being done within the right of the medical practitioners and within the laws of the within our health system. So they don't need to make an application to court. But when it comes now to if there is an offense that has been done, which is rape or incest, in that case, someone goes to report to the nearest police station, where a report is made and there is a realization upon medical examination that someone is already pregnant and is within the safe period. There's what we call the safe period, in which the weeks in which someone can get their pregnancy terminated. Some articles and some doctors say up until 12 weeks of the pregnancy, but some would prefer that the earlier the better, because in some cases it becomes risky. And some of our health facilities, not to attack or anything, are not as perfect as we would want them to be, so as to cater for the risks of termination of pregnancy. So where the doctor gives an examination and gives an affidavit and a recommendation that termination of pregnancy can be done, an application for termination is then done by a police officer who has received this case. And preferably, most of these cases will actually go to a victim-friendly unit police officer, which is a special unit within the police that can handle sensitive issues. They then compile all the affidavits from the medical practitioner, they compile the recommendations, they compile the evidence of their case. It does not necessarily mean that they are confirming that a rape has been committed or incest has been committed, because at this point nothing would have been prosecuted. But they then put this application and the recommendation from the health practitioners before the court in chambers, which is not an open court. And then the court receives the application. They can actually do an inquiry. If this is for someone who's under the age of 18, there is need for a guardian or a custodial parent to actually give an affidavit attesting and noting that they are confirming and consenting that termination of pregnancy be done on a minor child. Then if it's just an adult, they just give their confirmation and consent that they would want the termination of pregnancy to be done. When that is then done, the court issues a certificate of termination. this certificate then warrants the person who wants to have this termination done on their person to go to any general hospital and they will get the process done for free. So this is within the government sector. And then the process is that if you do not have any of the circumstances that I have done, none of the processes that I have just said apply. This is where we are now finding a lot of issues on, you know, those statistics we're getting of 70,000 plus women are, you know, having illegal termination of pregnancy, risking 20,000 women losing their lives during the process, just because at the hospitals and all of these facilities, they only require a certificate of termination that is issued by the court at law.
Yeah, thank you. So something interesting that I was talking about lately was how the Termination of Pregnancy Act only talks about rape and incest in particular. However, like there are sexual crimes which include sex that are not specifically rape and incest, for example, sex with a minor.
True.
So where does this leave young girls who have experienced statutory rape, for example? I know that we don't necessarily call it that in Zimbabwe, but people who have experienced mm-hmm. kind of violence, where does that leave them in terms of seeking termination of pregnancy?
It's actually a gap that we have at law, because if a law is specific, I think given that we're in the same profession, you know, there's a maxim that says the express mention of one thing excludes the other. So by virtue of it not being expressly said within this Termination of Pregnancy Act, it becomes a problem, because now I could attest to this, and the line of work that I've been doing, I have been dealing with a lot of sexual reproductive health rights issues. And I've noted that most of the cases that come on issues to do with having a young girl pregnant and things like that, it's actually some of these pregnancies are just two minors doing child's play, but they don't have a recourse to termination of pregnancy, or that having sexual intercourse with a young person offense, then they don't have a recourse, meaning they will be forced to go full term with a pregnancy that naturally, if they were given a chance, they would have wanted to terminate.
Right. Wow. What a disaster. Okay. So in terms of the criminal sanctions of this, would you say that there are statistics available, for example, on how many women are being prosecuted for unlawful termination? I mean, I recently saw something by ZRP where they were talking about how they arrested someone, but it's actually very rare for me to see it. So I'm interested to know if on the ground, women are actually going to jail for trying to access abortion.
All right. I think I also read that article, but the what I can say is there are cases of infanticide that the offense will be called infanticide. Let's say if the fetus is then seen as a baby, they would want to assume, quote this, they would want to assume that someone gave themselves early labor, gave birth, and then killed a child or things like that. But I really haven't come across a full prosecution of, you know, someone who has terminated. But however, I would attest that I have come across someone who has been accused of terminating a pregnancy and has gone through that whole arrest process, and there was a lot of confusion of how did you know I was pregnant, and there are also other defenses that women can actually get I wouldn't want to say it, because also I don't want to educate to educate offenders and codes in terms of the Zimbabwean law, but you can. If someone has a miscarriage, you cannot say they've had a termination of pregnancy, is it? So the statistics are rather flimsy. We do not have adequate statistics on that. Personally speaking, the ones that I heard, I had to revisit them, and I understood that they were unconfirmed because they were coming from different organizations we were talking to people from within the community, but the same was not the statistics that the police had, which statistics was not shared to me. So I cannot give you adequate information on the statistics. But knowing for the past 5 years that I've been in practice, it's been very hard to prove that someone has terminated a pregnancy and for them to go through the process of litigation to finality. There's just been this legal like someone being legally frustrated for wanting to make a choice to terminate.
Right. It sounds like everything is so nuanced. And I think it's got something to do with the fact that when you are in a system that works very slowly and everything is very slow, because even our formal justice system is very slow and we don't have a lot of great like data capturing, the things don't always translate to how exactly they're written on paper, to how they're gonna like function in person. Like I can imagine someone getting a certificate for termination and still somehow being unable to actually access the abortion just because our healthcare system does not work. That does not sound far-fetched to me at all.
It doesn't. And also, if I could just add to that conversation, even having termination of the Termination of Pregnancy Act, setting up a fine of up to 5,000 or $563 or imprisonment of up to 5 years, it's really sad having to look at it from a perspective of sexual reproductive health rights, if I would say.
Yeah, totally agreed. So in terms of just thinking about how we can move from this place, because I think right now we're at a place where even people who consider themselves to be somewhat conservative agree that there are way too many unsafe abortions that are going on in Africa, in Zimbabwe, that there's too many young girls dying, that the context of all of the child marriage and all of the other gender-based violence that we have makes it absolutely necessary for us to have unrestricted safe abortion. And we are learning from countries like Zambia and South Africa that those things are extremely necessary. So what is kind of our path to strategic litigation, or what would strategic litigation in this regard, what would that look like?
Okay. Firstly, what would come to mind, you've said something that I really wanted to put out there. The fact that we have a new Marriages Act, which has made it clear that child marriage is an offense, a sexual offense, and which has called upon the amendment of the Criminal Law and Codification Act, so to speak. It would be good that we follow in litigation to say if a child who has been exposed to child marriage then falls pregnant, and we don't have this act including child marriage as another sexual offense, then what is going to happen to this child? Because it doesn't take away that a sexual offense has been done. It doesn't take away the fact that this child probably have not consented or to the sexual intercourse that has led them to having a child. And even if they have consented, if we say someone is a child, honestly, do they appreciate their capacity to bear a child, to raise a child, and also the health implications on it? There is actually a conversation that has been going on with a lot of organizations on fistula, which is a condition that could occur where, you know, young girls that are not of age exposed to the process of childbearing, and it has really bad repercussions on one's health. So would we want the girl child to go through all of that and say we have moved towards the direction of criminalizing child marriage officially in Zimbabwe, and not also put recommendations or not also fast track having to deal with this issue of termination of pregnancy? What I know is also this would also influence on all of the awareness raising and all of the noise that organizations and people like you, Tinatswe, this space have been making towards just making it legal and giving someone a choice to be able to either bear a child or not bear a child when they are ready. So I think for strategic litigation, that is where I would start. Personally speaking, that is where I would start. Secondly, I would engage and have communications with the judicial authorities that actually deal with this issue. Because when you go or get into meetings with people from the JSC, that's the Judicial Service Commission, they note a lot of gaps within our laws from the offenses that have been committed. They give their own statistics of knowing that in court A, in this year, we have dealt with 10 cases of having sexual intercourse with a young person. But out of those 10 cases, five women, five girls, they're not even women, five girls were pregnant, and they can give recommendations. So when we have a voice that is coming from an authority that is highly seen as impartial by the government, they are also impartial, and we have your voice, and we put on a case within their courts to give evidence on how archaic our laws are without looking at the dates in which they are made and how they no longer serve the needs of the 21st century, then we can kickstart having to put change to our laws. I know different organizations in terms of looking at the international standards, United Nations and so forth, have been having these conversations on legalizing it with the premise of our sexual reproductive health right as women. So why do we have to have it being dictated by a government when the consequences are suffered by an individual?
Good question. Wish we had someone here who could answer.
Yeah, I really wish we had, we could make it a three-way where someone would actually give us that, because it's hypocritical to say we are, this is my opinion solely, this is not a legal opinion, but a reasonably gender sensitive opinion. We consider ourselves as Zimbabweans to be somewhat a high percentage of Christians. But, and we usually tend, even in some of these lawmaking processes, to hide behind that we are Christians. So this becomes immoral, this becomes that and that. But who is in prison? Who are these rapists? Are they coming from which other type of religion or practice? So it becomes hypocritical. I would think for myself that you put it out there. And if someone wants to do it, they do it out of their conscience, out of their moral feelings or behaviors, and out of their own will, because we cannot just put a yardstick of conversation. This I'm saying this because of the debates that have been going on lately with different groups. The only thing that has been holding that I noted was trying to hold up this high moral compass as a country and saying it is bad, it is what, but legally, even the debates that are there within people in the health field, they would say some debates that theories that if it's a fetus, it's not yet a child, so you've not killed and things like that. So why stand on a high campus on the morality thing, instead of allowing someone to be able to be their own judge of their future?
Yeah. One of the things that I'm constantly saying about safe abortion is I think, and in fact, I think this refers to many things when women are trying to claim more of their rights and more of their freedoms and more autonomy, is that everything becomes extremely political when all of the most progressive pieces of abortion legislation simply say that abortion is a medical procedure. It's simply fertility management. If you're not feeling well, you can go get your appendix removed. you're not feeling too good, you can go get your kidney removed. And that is more or less the same thing, because it is just women's ability to manage their fertility and to have those things
back. And if you don't want more kids, you can get your...
Exactly, absolutely. So in systems where you see women are being restricted in the ways that they're accessing reproductive justice and the way that they're accessing safe abortion, please believe that even women who want to have children, even women who want to manage their fertility in other ways, they are also being impacted. And that's really why it matters to all of us. So yeah, this has been very interesting. Do you have kind of like any... you know, recommendations that are burning within you that you think a next step, even outside of strategic litigation?
Okay, so firstly, I would think that having these conversations with people who sit within different parliamentary spaces to, you know, fast track this whole decriminalization. I would not even want an amendment of the termination of pregnancy. It should be decriminalized, because with the precepts of our human rights law, international human rights law, in which we also, you know, subscribe to, it is only important that we respect someone's you know, sexual health. We give the protection that is needed to women. We give a respect to their choice to do whatever they want with their body and to fulfill the sexual reproductive health rights of women through, you know, moving towards a more positive health approach to them. If contraceptions are available for free, even in some areas, and still there is a chance that they might not work because, you know, different strokes for different folks, application happens, why then would we not want to give someone who has, you know, maybe tried or still haven't tried but is not ready to have a child, the option to do what they want with their body? It solely lies on sexual reproductive health rights, and I do not think that our government should continue regulating it the same way that they have done away with certain laws just because they no longer serve the interest of time. Should be the same way they should deal with this, because this archaic piece of legislation does not serve the rights of women and girls in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you. Okay, so we have reached the end of this episode on unpacking legal frameworks in Zimbabwe on safe abortion. Thank you so much for your time, Ritendo. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think in the episode notes, if I manage to find any of those cases around women being prosecuted, I'll definitely put them in the episode notes. This conversation is completely non-exhaustive. And, you know, for those of you who are listening to this, we are going to be having an abortion fair in maybe about a month or 6 weeks. And we're going to be re-unpacking these things again. So thank you for your time, and we will catch you in the next episode.
Also, thank you so much. And I will also tag you on the cases and the stats when I receive them, because I have requested for information. It should be public information either way. So I'll be able to also share it so that you add it to the notes of this podcast.
Okay. Thank you.